This is episode number 320.
Wow.
Of the Middle Country Public Library podcast. Hello and welcome. I'm Sal DiVincenzo here with Jim Ward.
How's it going?
How are you?
Very good. Very good.
It must mean only one thing if Jim is in the studio, and that is
This Week in History.
Oh, it's so wonderful to have you back, Jim. And we have a lot of fun here talking about history.
Absolutely.
And this is your thing.
Yes.
Right? You like doing this.
It's the Jim Ward thing.
It's the Jim Ward thing. All right. So we're going to jump right in. This week, I did not ask Jim about any specifics. So you're just going to jump in and tell me all about it.
Absolutely.
All right, Jim.
So this week in history, March 24th, 1900.
1900.
All right,
here we go.
Work on the New York subway began.
Very nice.
Isn't that wild?
Wow.
And I think, did it open in 1904 or something? 1905?
Yeah, it wasn't that long after they started. Yeah. And back then, very, very safe to ride the subway.
Yeah. Apparently.
I think there was only one.
There was only one? One line?
One line. It went a couple of blocks. And yeah, it was very safe.
Yeah.
Not so much anymore.
No.
All right. All right. Very good.
Well, then we move on to March 24th, 1934.
Okay.
The Philippine Islands and the South Pacific were granted independence by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt after nearly 50 years of American control.
Wait a second. The Philippines were under American control?
Now, I wonder, it says nearly 50, but I wonder if they're talking about from the Spanish-American War.
That's interesting.
Because didn't we take a few different...
We took a lot of things.
We took a lot. like Guam and stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if that was part of that.
So say that again. It's 50, after 50 years of American control, the Philippines, we gave it to them.
Yeah, we granted independence.
And what year was that again?
1934.
1934.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So...
Wow.
Might be less than 50 years.
I
don't know.
Is that maybe why their flag has the red, white, and blue kind of thing happening?
Like, maybe.
Right? It's a little red, white, and blue, maybe a little yellow in there?
Possibly.
Okay.
Honoring their, you know, roots.
Their roots.
If you want to call it their roots.
Sure. Very cool. I had no idea.
Yeah.
You learned something new here on the podcast.
Absolutely.
Cool.
March 24th, 1973, Pink Floyd released the album Dark Side of the Moon. Now, I don't know much about Pink Floyd, but I know that was popular.
It was popular, Dark Side of the Moon. Definitely. That's the album that a lot of people say if you started at the beginning of The Wizard of Oz, you know, the music will go along with things that happen in the movie. I don't know if that's true or not, but...
I've heard that. I never...
Yes, well, it is a classic album, I will say that. I'm not a big Pink Floyd fan, but if I had to pick an album to listen to, well, there's two. There's The Wall, which I'm sure you know, and this one, Dark Side of the Moon.
Very good.
Very nice. And that was 51 years ago.
Where does time
go? Those guys are still rocking it, I'm thinking.
Is that right?
I think they're still out there.
Good for them.
Yes, they watch the show.
They should be their best selves.
They
absolutely.
Watch the show in the nursing home.
So now we skip ahead to 1989, where you have one of the largest oil spills in U.S. history that occurred as the oil tanker Exxon Valdez ran aground in Prince William Sound off of Alaska. Resulting in 11 million gallons of oil leaking into the natural habitat over a stretch of 45 miles. Isn't that insane?
Yes. And what year? 1989. I remember this. Do you remember this? You're a little kid.
Nah, I was like seven.
All right, forget it. Yeah, you were just, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, probably something like
literally.
That. Yes. I remember this. This was pretty bad. This was a ecological disaster of epic proportions. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's... You know, they see the pictures of just the oil slick and whatnot and all those animals.
That's awful.
Yeah,
that's awful.
It was pretty bad.
Was that as bad as, like, the BP one in, what was that, 09 or something?
Probably, no, the BP one was probably worse.
Yeah.
I think that was much worse. I think what made this one bad and terrible was the fact that, you know, I think the guy was what? He was drunk or something like that?
Oh, I don't know.
The captain? Yeah. Something happened with the captain.
Wow.
Definitely definitely not a technological or mechanical issue. I think it was a crew issue.
Yeah, so. And that's very unfortunate.
It is unfortunate.
Because that's preventable.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yes.
Let's see.
What else do you have?
March 25th, 1911, you had the raging fire that that erupted inside a garment factory in New York City, killing 123 women.
Was this Triangle?
Yep, Triangle Shirtwaist Company in Lower Manhattan.
Yeah.
It engulfed the 8th and 9th floors. It also says it killed 23 men as well.
Yeah.
About 50 of the victims had jumped to their deaths rather than perish from the flames. It spurred national interest, though, concerning the rights of mostly immigrant women.
Yes.
Workers of the New York garment industry who labored with long hours, six or 7 days a week in cramped, dangerous conditions for about $5 weekly pay.
Which was, yes.
At the time.
At the time was, okay, it wasn't great.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that you mentioned, you know, jumping to their death. It's kind of eerie thinking about that. And also the 9/11. World Trade Center.
Yeah.
But I don't think that was the only company in that building. There were multiple companies.
Oh,
but
is that
was
right?
The one that where most of the people were were killed. And
such a shame.
Yeah, but, you know, I hate to say this, but these terrible tragedies that happen in the past, they do allow us as a society, as a culture, as humanity to come up with, you know, rules and laws and ways of keeping this from ever happening again.
Right. Like so, like Titanic, when Titanic sank.
That's right.
That brought on whole new regulations for shipping lines.
Exactly. And the doors now on the ships are much bigger and they can accommodate more than just rows.
Right. And that helps, doesn't it?
It does help. Jack could have gone on that door.
He
could have gone on that door, and they could have had wonderful adventures together. Mm-hmm. Titanic 2 in Fiji.
She said, "I'll never let go, Jack."
And she did.
And then she lets go.
That's the first thing she did.
Unbelievable.
That's the first thing she did. Never let go. And then she had the thing with her, and it was what was the Seinfeld thing? That old lady, she's just a liar, isn't she? Okay, we're getting off track.
All right. Next one. March 25th, 1965, you have the Alabama Freedom March from Selma to Montgomery.
Yes.
The marches were organized to protest the blocking of Black Americans' right to vote by the systematic racist structure of the Jim Crow South.
Right, and that was Martin Luther King Jr.
I believe
did that,
so,
right?
Yeah.
He was part of that.
I think John Lewis. Is that
John Lewis, too.
Yeah, I believe he was part of that as well.
Wow, okay.
Then we have March 26, 1953. Jonas Salk. We know Jonas.
Yes.
He successfully tested the vaccine against polio. In 1952, an epidemic year for polio, there were 58,000 new cases reported in the United States and more than 3,000 died from the disease. For his work in helping to eradicate the disease, which is known as infant paralysis because it mainly affects children, Dr. Salk was celebrated as the great doctor benefactor of the time.
Very good.
Yep. March 26, 1979, this is a pretty historic thing. You had the Camp David Peace Treaty signed between Egypt's Anwar Sadat and Israel's, I'm not sure I'm saying this right.
It's okay.
Menachem Begin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so okay. If Sarah was here, she'd mess it up too.
But that's that famous picture you see where the three of them, I think, are... including President Carter, I think they're shaking hands and stuff. So,
yes.
The next one, it's a very interesting one. It's March 27th, 1909.
Okay.
The first fingerprint evidence used in a murder case.
First fingerprint evidence used in a murder case.
Yep.
And where was this? In the United States?
This was in England.
England.
So, okay. So I'm going to have to read a little bit about it just so you guys understand it.
All right.
So the bludgeoned bodies of London shopkeepers Thomas and Anne Farrow were found by a worker, Scotland Yard investigator Melville McNaughton, best known for a major 1894 report on Jack the Ripper, noticed a greasy smudge on the inside of the cash box.
All right.
3 years earlier, an English court had admitted fingerprint evidence in a theft case. The cash box print didn't match any of the tiny file of criminal prints at Scotland Yard.
Okay.
But a milkman reported seeing two young men, later identified as Alfred and Albert Stratton, near the Farrow house on that fateful morning.
Okay.
Alfred's right thumb was a perfect match for the print on the Farrow's cash box.
Okay.
When the milkman couldn't positively identify the brothers at trial, the fingerprint became the prosecution's only solid evidence.
Wow.
So the Stratton brothers were convicted and hung on May 23rd, 1905, in the case that gave birth to forensic science.
That is remarkable.
Isn't that something?
That is something.
I never heard that until I was researching this.
Right. Cool.
Pretty good
England,
stuff.
Right? What is that? Scotland Yard, right?
Scotland Yard. Yeah. What is that? Like cool. Their...
That's like their... well, that's...
Their FBI or
no,
something?
No, no, maybe no. A little... I think their FBI is what? MI6 or...
Oh, see, I thought that was their CIA.
Oh, maybe it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think it's... Yeah, that's their like their main police
I just picture people with like the cloaks.
Yes.
You know.
They do cloaks very well over there in England.
A pipe, you know, with and the nice little plaid hat or something.
Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes. So that's what I'm picturing.
Imagining. Yeah, yeah.
this is another big one. March 28th, 1979. Does that ring a bell to you?
March 28th, 1979. No.
All right. The Three Mile Island nuclear disaster.
Oh, Three Mile Island. Yep. I've been to Three Mile Island.
Have you?
I have. Wow. It's in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
Yes, I've driven right down there and pulled over to the side of the road and taken a picture in front of the towers.
Is it still a functioning?
I don't think so. Probably I think not, back, right? In, I think late teens, I think like 2019, oh, okay. 2020, they closed it down, wow. I think. Yeah.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Well, here's what happened. A combination of equipment failure and operator error led to a partial meltdown of the power plant's Unit 2 reactor that resulted in the release of small amount of radioactive material.
Small amount.
Yeah, as so they say, small.
In quotes, yeah.
Experts
also in quotes.
Determined that the approximately 2 million people in the nearby area during the accident were exposed to small amounts of radiation.
Oh, boy.
The estimated average radiation dose was about 1 millirem, if I'm saying that right, above the area's natural background of about 100 to 125 per year.
Yes.
To put this into further context, exposure from a chest x-ray is about 6 millirem.
Okay. But, okay, so not as bad as like Chernobyl, let's
say.
Right, right. Or was that Fukushima or what out in Japan?
Yeah.
Still bad, though. You don't want any of that.
You don't really want to have any radiation coming
at you. I think I read somewhere, maybe I'm imagining it, I read somewhere where, like, after this happened, people were saying, oh, I felt like this warm kind of air or something like that. I don't know. But, yeah, no, that's a terrible thing, and it's very close to home. When you realize it, you don't, you know, you don't kind of realize it. But I think that's, what, near Harrisburg, Three Mile Island?
Yeah, I think it was near Harrisburg,
like on the Susquehanna or something like that, yeah.
So it's okay. Gettysburg is okay.
Gettysburg was okay. All the ghosts
no
of
radiation
Gettysburg.
At Gettysburg.
No radiation at all. All right, Jimmy.
All righty.
What else you got?
So March 29th, 1943, you have the rationing of meat, cheese, butter, and cooking oil that goes into effect in the United States.
Bad times.
Yeah, rationing involves setting limits on purchasing certain high-demand items.
Yep.
The government issued a number of points to each person, even babies, which had to be turned in along with the money to purchase the goods made with the restricted items.
Stamps, right? They were stamps?
Yeah,
or
they got
coupons
like,
or
they
something?
They got like stamp books.
Yeah,
and they gave a certain amount that was deemed...
We are so lucky. We do not realize what our ancestors and what generations before us went through. We are so lucky, and I think we're so ungrateful in many cases.
Oh, yeah.
We don't realize
we haven't had to ration, I think, since
then. We don't have to ration, and we get upset when the coupon at McDonald's doesn't work. And these poor people could not eat meat or butter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they also... here it says tires were the first product to be rationed starting in 1942 after the Pearl Harbor attack.
Yeah, well, because they needed rubber, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
They needed the things that, you know, tires.
And, and then they started doing sugar, then coffee. Imagine coffee being added to the list.
That's crazy.
Followed by meats, fats, canned fish, cheese, and canned milk the following March.
Canned milk.
And, this is where it talks about the books. So every American was entitled to a series of war ration books filled with stamps that could be used to buy the restricted items.
Okay.
And within weeks of the first issuance, more than 91% of the U.S. population had registered to receive them.
That's because back then we came together as a country.
Yep. United.
You know, united. Yep.
Let's see. So, like, for instance— customers were allowed to use 48 blue points to buy canned, bottled, or dried foods, and 64 red points to buy meat, fish, and dairy each month.
Okay.
That's if they were in stock in the first place.
Yeah.
So there was that. That must have been incredibly difficult.
Very difficult, especially if you had kids, you know, and the kids had to, you also had to ration for the kids.
Yep.
Wasn't like, you know, now maybe they would say, okay, if you have a child at home, you're allowed to have this amount instead of this amount. But back then, no, everybody did it.
That's why they're called the greatest generation.
The greatest generation.
Greatest generation.
And I don't think we have many of them left anymore. Right?
I mean, I hope that's not the case, but you know.
No, I'm saying like, you know, they're all dying or dead.
You meant we're not going to have any generation.
We'll have a great generation someday.
I mean, unfortunately, that generation is...
The McDonald's coupons will come back.
They'll come back. Jeez. And your favorite, which is?
The McDouble.
The McRib I thought you also enjoyed.
Yeah, the McRib's good too. Very difficult to get a McRib though.
Well, they come and then they go.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to see a McRib without the sauce and everything on it. It doesn't look very good.
So here we go. March 30th, 1867, the U.S. buys Alaska for $7.2 million.
What a great purchase, let me tell you. What a nice purchase we made there with Alaska. Well, it's beautiful.
And for less than 2 cents an acre,
yes,
the U.S. purchased nearly 600,000 square miles.
Yep. Who do we purchase that from?
From Russia.
From Russia. We got a good deal back then.
And opponents of the Alaska purchase persisted in calling it Seward's Folly, Seward's Icebox.
Yes.
Until 1896.
Until they found something up there, didn't they?
When the great Klondike Gold Strike convinced even the harshest critics that Alaska was a valuable addition to American territory.
Look what's in here.
So that was the... folly that ended up being a great thing.
That's a great thing.
Yep.
Exactly.
March 30th, 1909, the Queensboro Bridge, also known as the 59th Street Bridge, opens.
This is a very good bridge. It's a very iconic. I think it's just as iconic as the Brooklyn Bridge, I think.
Is it?
Yeah. If you look at the pictures, I'm putting pictures up now here so people are going to see.
I also
like that ironwork or whatever you want to call it.
Oh, I love the old-time structures and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't realize that the Queensboro and the 59th Street Bridge were the same thing.
Yeah.
I always heard of the 59th Street Bridge, but I never...
There's a song. Isn't there like the 59th Street song, I think.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. No, it's the same because that's where you're coming into the city from Queens and you're going into 59th Street.
Oh, okay.
What is that up there? Columbia Presbyterian Hospital's over to your right and there's Upper East Side. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Cool, nice. What year was that again?
1909.
Man. They don't build them like that anymore, folks. No.
March 30th, 1964. I thought this was pretty cool. The Beatles have 10 hits on the Billboard's Hot 100 at the same time.
That's amazing.
Isn't that amazing? I don't think
Taylor Swift is... Were you going to say that? I don't think Taylor Swift has had that yet.
But I can't think of any other band or performer that ever had that at the same time.
No. Speaking of things they don't make... like that anymore is the Beatles. Those songs.
The good old days.
The good old days, yeah.
And finally, we have March 30th, 1981. President Reagan is shot by John Hinckley Jr. as he was exiting the Washington Hilton Hotel.
Right.
He was giving a speech and was coming out, and he started firing Hinckley.
Yeah.
He hit, I believe, a police officer.
And Brady, right?
And Brady, press secretary?
Press secretary.
He was hit in the head, I believe.
That was bad. Yeah.
And Reagan was hit in the, I believe, the ribs or the lung.
In the lung.
Yeah. And like inches from the heart.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. He said it was like a little sting. Considering his age at the time.
Yeah.
And the fact that he pulled back so well, I think that kind of did something for him politically as well, I think, you know. But interestingly enough, Mr. Ward, that is episode number 99 of History Bites.
That is correct.
Which we will link in the show notes.
Yes.
If you want to learn a little more, get a little more in-depth look at the attempted assassination.
I do enjoy the quote that when he was being rolled in for surgery, he said something like, "I hope," he's saying to the doctors, I hope you're all Republicans." And the lead surgeon said to him, "Today, Mr. President, we're all Republicans."
Which, again, is a great thing, and we all came together for him. And and then once he got better, then everybody went back to their normal their sides. But incredible stuff. And I've stayed at that hotel, actually, for computers and libraries.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's interesting to see it still around. Wow. Yeah, I stayed at that hotel, and but that was something else.
That's something.
Yeah. Another This Week in History, Jim, of all these amazing things. And it's you don't realize how much happens in 1 week over the years. I'm sure you had other things that that you were able to find, but we'll do it next year.
Well, we can do another one next year.
Exactly. Very good. So once again, thank you for joining us for
This Week in History.
And if you want to see other This Week in Histories, you can visit our website, mcplpodcast.com. And in the upper, I think it's the upper right-hand corner, just type in This Week in History, and all the This Week in Histories will be there.
There we go.
And if you want to watch Mr. Ward's History Bites program, which coming up, what is it, next week or the week after?
I believe April 2nd
will be the 100th episode.
100
of This Week in
History. What started during the pandemic.
That's right.
Has now become this.
I'm sorry, not This Week in History. History Bites.
Yeah.
Yeah. The 100th episode of History Bites. So you can watch all 100 episodes.
Yeah. They're all there on our YouTube page. And
I got to be honest. Our most popular things that we put up on YouTube, Mr. Ward's getting hundreds and hundreds of views. One of them actually got 87,000 views, 88,000 views.
Because, Patsy Mink.
Yep, because it was featured by YouTube. Yep. So that's why we're bringing you on this week, Jimmy, because we need to boost our numbers.
Yeah, there we go.
But thank you so much for
my
coming
pleasure.
On
Thanks
and
for
doing another
me.
This Week in History.
Absolutely.
And thank you all for watching and listening. We greatly appreciate it. If you liked it, hit the like button on YouTube. And if you will do us a great favor, we greatly appreciate it if you subscribe to our channel here on YouTube. So thank you so much for being with us this week. For Jim Ward, I'm Sal DiVincenzo. See you on the next show.